The following programming is sponsored by Dr. Joseph Fallon Jr. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
It's time once again to get inside the world of medicine as prominent endocrinologist Dr. Joseph J. Fallon Jr. brings you Inside Medicine. Stay tuned for interviews with eminent medical specialists and receive vital information about your health. Now, here is Dr. Joseph J. Fallon Jr. with another edition of Inside Medicine.
Good morning, Philadelphia and New Jersey. Welcome to Inside Medicine. I do want to advertise for a second and say that next week we're going to have a fantastic cholesterol heart guest, Peter Montevagna. He's been on once before. He is probably one of the most adept, well-read, prepared lipidologists in the Philadelphia marketplace. I do want to say, if you want to hear about A to Z on cholesterol, remember heart attacks and other issues such as that, bad supply to the toes with blood. That's all going to be talked about next week by Peter. If you want to hear something good, a well-organized guy, he's coming next week, 10 a.m. to 11. Thank you very much, Pete. Let me just open up with a quote. Happiness is not reaching your goal. Happiness is being on the way. That's Camprod, IKEA founder, stated that. That makes sense to me. Number two, what isn't said is as important as what is said. That's Colson Whitehead, a writer, and I have to say that's incredibly positive. We just want to make sure that everybody is ready to learn today and make sure that we get smarter and smarter. What's an issue in today's medical world? Quote from Investor's Business Daily, brace yourself for healthcare cost hikes. Ouch. Healthcare cost and price of insurance are rising again in 2025. The sticker shock is being driven by a few factors. Inflation, of course, is a factor. Rising prescription drug costs are another. They rose only 7.2% in 2024. That's a nice raise, according to Mercer. Costly new drugs such as GLP-1 diabetic drugs and weight loss drugs, i.e. they do both, are adding to the overall cost of drugs. Hospital consolidation, an aging population that requires more medical services, and a shortage of healthcare workers are also pushing up costs. Think what happened in COVID when nurses were allowed to go from state to state and how much they had to be paid, especially to help deliver healthcare to those who were super sick with COVID with that high mortality. The bottom line is monitor your healthcare cost and rigorously evaluate your coverage options each annual enrollment season. The enrollment season is here, so you want to get to it on making sure that what you need is covered in the insurance that you purchase. To get a gauge on what level of care best suits you, look at the past year's cost. Tally up prescription receipts and doctor copays. Make note of any personal or family history of chronic health care issues and check to see if your care providers are covered by your plan. So is your RX is covered, or is your doctor covered? And just make sure that you're always prepared for an eventual problem with health. Thank you, Investors Daily. Let me just bring up a little bit about hypercholesterolemia, because next week Peter is going to be on. Hypercholesterolemia is most commonly but not exclusively defined as an elevated level of low-density lipoprotein cholesterol or high-density lipoprotein cholesterol or low. An alternative term is dyslipidemia. Just remember that we've got to take a look at your LDL, your bad, your HDL, your good, your total cholesterol, and any other issues such as LPA. LPA has hit the scene. I'm sure Peter's going to talk about this next week. Lipoprotein small A is a cholesterol molecule that has significant damage to vessel walls. It's very hard to beat. The good news is that there is a medication that has been improved now, which can reduce your LPA by about 50%, and that's called inclisiran, where you get an infusion. And that infusion can pay dividends for many because that LPA is a very atherogenic problem. So again, Peter's going to be with us. I look forward to it. Think about lifestyle modifications that you might want to think about. Think about exercise. Think about smoking cessation, exclamation point. And what about pharmacologic intervention? Does your insurer cover what you need? So again, you're going to hear terms such as total cholesterol, bad cholesterol, which is LDL, hypertriglyceridemia, which is an issue that's not as mostly atherosclerotic heart disease, but can be have other distal issues. So let us go a little bit down the line. I do want to talk about thyroid eye disease. So thyroid eye disease phraseology is proptosis. And certain patients who become hyperthyroid, some can get it if they're hypothyroid, but mostly it's a hyperthyroid condition, a Graves' ophthalmopathy. And what happens is the physical exam reveals redness of the eyes. A lot of people are taking lubricant eye drops and topical steroids. I do want to point out that if you drop your eye drops right where the canthus is, right where you're near your nose, that basically the eye is not going to get covered because the eye drop flow goes from the outside in. So the right to the left and the left to the right. So you have to put those in the outside part of the eye. And that way the whole eye will get covered with the medication. Additionally, I would recommend that you put your finger and right near where the exit from the eye, where the drops go out through your nose, put your finger over that, hold it for 2 minutes so that the eye can benefit from additional time of the medications, which are very expensive, to get those eyes better. So put your drops in, make sure they're on the outside of each eye, and kind of put your finger over that canthus where the eye flow goes out and into your nose. So which is the most likely diagnosis for a patient's condition who's got bulging eyes, just doesn't seem to have her eyes lined up perfect, blood pressure is a little bit on the high side, and the doctor astutely orders a TSH receptor antibody assay, which we don't use that often, but if that's called TRAB, if that's positive, then you are a thyroid eye patient. So basically, with those symptomatologies, I will tell you that Will's eye is a fantastic place for thyroid eye disease. The head of the department is tip-top. The patient's symptoms are consistent with moderate to severe thyroid eye disease and autoimmune disease that affects the orbital and periorbital tissues. In other words, your eyes are in a bony socket, and as they get inflamed, they grow and it pushes the eye out, called a bulge, that's usually seen with Graves' disease, can be hypothyroid. Signs and symptoms vary. Characteristics of moderate to severe thyroid eye disease include ocular symptoms that significantly affect the quality of life, such as eye discomfort, upper and lower lid retraction, where you get a bulge, proptosis, where the eyeball moves out because there's not enough room in the socket, and frequently double vision will be seen. Patients might also exhibit symptoms of hypothyroidism rarely, such as waking and drowsiness, or symptoms of hyperthyroidism, such as tachycardia, racing heart rate, palpitations, nervousness. So it's very, very important to take care of this thing. We do note that cigarette smoking is the strongest modifiable risk factor associated with thyroid eye disease. Thyroid dysfunction and elevated levels of TRAB, which is a marker of thyroid eye disease, are modifiable disease factors which can be managed with appropriate treatment. Systemic complications of thyroid dysfunction might precede, coincide, or follow eye disease. So in other words, it doesn't always play the game fairly, and it can be variable. The patient's history of smoking, as well as results from current laboratory studies, in this case, indicated thyroid eye disease. And then the doctor recommended discontinuation of cigarette smoking. I should note that typically thyroid eye disease has a self-limiting course of disease over 12 to 18 months. That can be a long time. hopefully it will go into quiescence. But again, there are medications that the ophthalmologist can use today, a little bit on the expensive side, but can be very helpful in maintaining vision for long-term use. So again, thyroid eye disease is a toughie. Make sure that we pick it up and things will go better. So I just want to talk a little bit about cholesterol, because we're going to have that expert on, Peter Bentivoglu, next time. And that what we really want to know is, you know, how does one monitor what's going on? So again, just a review in cholesterol business. When you get a lab report, usually there's like five different variables, but the most important is your LDL cholesterol, your bad. LDL cholesterol is the one that dictates most of the overall issues with thyroid, with cholesterol. We do note that risk factors for hypercholesterolemia, which is associated with plaquing of your vessels, your blood vessels, include insulin resistance, which type 2 diabetes is well known for. Excessive body weight with a body mass index over 25 kilogram per meter squared. Ouch, cigarette smoking. Ouch, hypothyroidism. Cholestatic liver disease, nephrotic syndrome, and certain medications. Generally, what happens is the doctor today will order a lipid profile, which gives them about five different cholesterol levels, which then can be acted upon to counteract the hyperlipidemia, to make sure that we can get into reductions in cardiovasculars of about 30 to 45%. Remember, so the doctor will generally order a lipid panel, which has good cholesterol, bad cholesterol, total cholesterol, triglycerides, etc. Genetic testing can be done, especially for this lipoprotein A. So lipoprotein A is a aberrant cholesterol profile that is very aggressive. And if not taken care of, people will usually die way sooner than they would have otherwise. Lipoprotein A, though, has had good news. A medication, inclisiran, was approved recently, and that can result of a 50% lipoprotein A decrease. 50% decrease in LPA, very beneficial. That treatment for that medication is usually given by an infusion. But again, the results have been very, very good with longer longevity, which we like. So again, when you go to the doctor, do you need a lipid profile? Usually Medicare will pay for one a year. Do you need your TSH checked? Because basically with hypothyroidism, your cholesterol will rise. And if you get that treated for pennies a day, that issue will be aborted. And remember, lipoprotein A, you got to take a look at it. Did you have people in your family dying in their late 40s, 50s? If you have somebody with that kind of issue and it seems to penetrate the family, think about lipoprotein A. It's not on the lipid panel. You have to ask your doctor, or your doctor will get, after he takes a history, of getting a lipoprotein small A. Additional genetic testing can be done. I do want to point out that generally the doctors will go to a cardiovascular risk assessment profile, which Framingham generated in 2008. There are calculators out there to try and assess what your risk is, but remember that lipoprotein small A is a nasty, nasty. Peter will be with us next week, and I can't wait. I do want to give a little kudos out to Banting and Best and MacLeod. This trio did wonders in the 1920s, and it's now been 100 years. So I do want to thank those people. They did not take any money. They basically found their ability to rectify diabetes type 1, did not take any money for that, which is very, very nice of them. That's been 100 years ago. We noted that MacLeod was a lab researcher, and actually a student at the time when he got involved with Banting, who was the surgeon who did the dog surgeries to isolate out the pancreas and to isolate out various issues such as insulin. Okay, so basically their first trial in 2021, basically they had a dog live for 70 days. And then what happened is that their institution hooked up with Eli Lilly, and they started to manufacture insulin. First, they had all the animal parts of the pancreas being shipped in by rail to Eli Lilly, and they manufactured their insulin product. Leonard Thompson was the first individual to get treated, i.e. the first successful diabetic. I know he rode a motorcycle, so he was a little bit crazy. Okay, so what do we want to do to make sure that everybody lives a little longer? Sometimes you have to cut your dinner plate in half. Today, we have to sometimes think about using different medications, which have really increased the ability to make diabetics to live longer and better. ACE inhibitors came around. Altase, years and years ago, phenomenal product, making sure that kidneys didn't deteriorate, making sure the patient's blood pressure were well controlled with minimal side effects. So again, we've come a long way. Then we came up with the GLP drugs. Now, the GLP drugs are getting a little bit of a tough call because everybody's saying that the cost of GLP drug use for the population is a little bit over the top. Now, the only problem is that how many people do I see come in every week? We have them on a GLP-1 drug, and they're not diabetic anymore. Maybe they lost 20 pounds. Maybe they lost 30 pounds. Maybe they lost 50 pounds. But absolutely fantastic, the GLP drugs. So, again, cost is always an issue, and there's all this consideration of, is it worthwhile with the GLP-1 drugs? I know the politicians are debating this at this point, but we do have to say that the GLP-1 drugs are absolutely phenomenal. They're generally taken by a shot once a week. They go to your brain and tell you that you don't have to eat, that you're allowed to lose weight. So these GLP drugs, whoever generated it, found an area of the brain that was responsible for eating, and that with that medication being generated, people decrease their eating, calories go down, weight goes down. Does diabetes go down? I will tell you this, that every day in my practice, one or two people aren't diabetic anymore. Of course, it's kind of hard to tell them to stop their GLP-1 drug because basically they look better, feel better, and are doing much, much more. So again, what's going to happen long term with the cost of these drugs? Tough call. I do want to talk about let's see. I do want to talk about DEXA scanning because that keeps coming up more and more. We do note that the United States government has done a wonderful job treating women for this condition of osteoporosis. People have to remember that DEXA scanning is able to be approved by Medicare every 2 years. The object is to make sure that bones stay healthy, that people aren't losing height, such as when you get a Dowager's hump, when all of a sudden the people start humping over. You want to take action before that. So again, in the Medicare business, DEXA scanning is okayed by the government every 2 years as needed if clinically a risk. So what happens is on this deal, the DEXA scan is painless. It's very quick. It basically is going to measure what your lumbar spine looks like. So that's kind of down the bottom of the spine, kind of where your hips are. And they're going to make an assessment called a bone density. Now, if it's over 2.5, that's minus 2.5, that's considered osteoporosis. If you're less than that, you can be on your way, or you can be A-okay. So the lumbar spine is very interesting. And then they can also do a distal radius where your wrist is, because that area there is under different control of hormones to make sure that the bones stay good. So the question is, if you do have a minus 2.5, you're a candidate for osteoporosis treatment. I do have to say there's about 8 drugs on the market now. Some of them are IV. Generally, we have oral agents. Fosamax has been around a long time. Actinol has been around a long time. And that we can kind of, if we get it early, we can abort needing the more expensive drugs, which can be in infusions, to help out. We do note that Medicare also was quite generous and recently approved Prolia for people with a T-score of minus 2.5, i.e. that means they have osteoporosis. And by utilizing the Prolia, we've seen a massive reduction in further fractures. And patients frequently say to me, Dr. Fallon, how come I don't fracture anymore? And that's because the government did approve treating osteoporosis patients with Prolia for 10 years. This is a fantastic improvement. It was limited to two years, and now it's up to 10. And they're the best shot you can get. And I give the credit to the government for helping people not lose height, be able to stand a little taller, and to get better quality of life because they can move more, do more, and obviously are going to live longer. So DEXA scanning is in. We have to say that it's a phenomenal positive product. Now, I do want to talk about an article that came over my interest, and it says, be smart about Social Security. Most people know that Social Security is a lifetime annuity that you can file for starting at age 62 or earlier in some cases. One point that deserves the spotlight given today's longer lifespans is the timing of when you file for benefits. The longer you wait to file Social Security, the higher your monthly check will be, about 8% more for every year you wait up to age 70. After age 70, there's no benefit to waiting. Let me just say that again. There's money, there's health, and there's making sure you know the rules. After age 70, there's no benefit to waiting to take your Social Security. Women may also be more hesitant to take a risk compared with men, says Adam, whose financial practices focuses for decades on female clients. Quote, the number one mistake women make is keeping too much of their portfolio in cash, end quote. Quote, so you have to flip the conversion and not talk about risk per se, but about ending up with a reliable and robust income stream for the rest of your life. This was published in Kiplinger's report, October 24. Women also collect less in Social Security than men because their lifetime earnings are usually lower. In 2022, the average monthly benefit for men age 65 was $2,020. Versus 1638 for women of the same age. So again, we want to make sure that people take advantage of what the government is offering, because if you don't add, you're not going to get. That's the problem. Okay. So I do want to talk a little bit about an issue that came up this week, and that's chronic pruritus, which is defined as an itch experience for 6 weeks or longer. Approximately 22% of people in their lifetime will experience such. Approximately 1% of physician visits are for chief concern of chronic pruritus. Chronic itch or pruritus is associated with adverse outcomes, including impaired sleep and reduced quality of life. Chronic pruritus can adversely affect quality of life and can be categorized into inflammatory, neuropathic, or combined, inflammatory, or nervepathic. First-line therapies are topical steroids for inflammatory causes, such as hydrocortisone, topical 2.5%, or an agent such as triamcinolone, 0.1%, which is RX only. Topical neuropathic agents for neuropathic causes, such as menthol and pramoxine, and combination of these therapies for mixed etiologies for chronic pruritus. So again, if you got the itch, you want to get rid of it. Itch can be due to inflammation that's precipitated by the immune system, for example, such as allergic contact dermatitis, atopic dermatitis, and urticaria. No one likes urticaria for sure. So we have a various number of causes of chronic itch. Immunologic conditions include atopic dermatitis, chronic urticaria, lichen planus, psoriasis, seborrheic keratosis. Systemic conditions with secondary itch, end-stage kidney disease. Dialysis can be tough. carcinoid syndrome, you got to make that diagnosis. Diabetes is associated with itch. There's paraproteinemias associated, and there's something called P. vera. There are other causes such as infectious bed bugs, dermatophyte fungal infections, hate to say it, HIV, new infections or uncontrolled infection. Lice can be the cause. Scabies can be another issue. Medications, surprisingly, that cause itch include opioids, stimulants, and systemic immunotherapy. Now, want to talk a little bit about that thyroid eye disease again. Remember that 44% of the people have it and just don't want to admit it. Two out of three have a bulge in their eyes. So, in other words, when you look at the patient, the muscles have imploded and gotten bigger. So that's pushing your eyeball forward, and that's called proptosis. And when that happens, you can get diplopia, double vision. By that time, you should be seeing an ophthalmologist for maybe 6 months prior at the least. So we want to make sure that that thyroid eye disease gets picked up, which is very, very important. Okay. I do want to give a shout out to Rowan University's chief, Richard German. Dr. German has spent his medical career taking care of patients who are underserved and also often stigmatized. He began his career practicing palliative medicine for patients with HIV and AIDS. Dr. German's focus shifted to pain management, not only for HIV patients, but also for patients living with chronic pain or undergoing rehabilitation from neuromuscular injuries. The rise of the opioid epidemic prompted Dr. German to expand his practice to another patient population, individuals in need of treatment for substance use disorder. Dr. German is an addiction specialist. His areas of expertise include rehabilitative medicine, pain management, substance use disorder, and neuromuscular disease. The NMI at Rowan University, Neuromuscular Institute. Dr. German and his team undertake clinical practice, community outreach, and research in the form of investigations and clinical trials. Dr. German has received numerous grants from federal and state institutions to conduct studies focusing on pain, patient safety around opioids, self-prescribing, neuropathic pain syndromes, HIV patient pain, and non-pharmacological approach to pain, including osteopathic manipulation. His work has been published in numerous peer-reviewed journals and textbooks. Dr. German also studies addiction and access assessed to treatment in different types of communities. In South Jersey, the challenge is navigating both urban and rural communities. Dr. German states, these communities are very difficult, but will absolutely still have vulnerable patients in both types of communities. In rural communities, access to care is a big issue. Dr. German is a pioneer in the treatment education and research in the field of pain management. Dr. German developed training programs for doctors, which have been recommended by the state of New Jersey's medical department. He is now the chief at Rowan University in South Jersey, and a very, very high output player, a guy who's incredibly quick, a guy who cares. So hats off to Dr. Richard German, who's now the chair at Rowan University Department of Internal Medicine. Thank you. Okay. I do want to now go back to hypothyroidism just to get everybody on target here. So we talked about thyroid eye disease, where you get a bulge of the eye and the eye moves forward. That's for hyperthyroid. Just want to talk about hypothyroid a little bit. That's something I live on every day. We do note that just to go off, thyroid eye disease makes 44% of people very self-conscious, and it's the generation of diplopia where you see double is an issue. So again, that goes to the hyperthyroid side usually. But hypothyroidism, want to discuss it. We have a significant issue because basically, where are the drug products coming for the patients in America for hypothyroidism? So generally, if you go back 40 years, Synthroid was the number one seller. That's made out of a company out of the suburbs of Chicago. That particular medication has been highly successful. They had what they call batch-to-batch mm-hmm. uniformity. So in other words, their product always was the same. They didn't have high variations. They had high quality players making sure their products always were the right dose, minimal deviations, and available. Lately, there has been an issue where the United States government has decided that it wants people to use generic drugs. And I would say this, that it looks to me like some pharmacy outfits are being told by their bosses that they must dispense generic L-thyroxine for a thyroid condition. The problem is that thyroid hormone is absorbed in only about 40%. Therefore, it's prone to what they call bioavailability problems. So if you take 100, you get 100. No, if you take 100, you get 40. So the problem is that not all manufacturers can hit the 40. And when that's the case, then people are going to get high variations. So, you know, if you're married, you want your wife to be different parts of the week based on how much thyroid they have. That's a little bit of an embellishment, but it's important to make sure that you get a drug product that is consistently available, especially if you have a bioavailability problem drug like L-thyroxine. So medications such as Synthroid and Unithroid are made in America. They're the ones that I usually prescribe. The problem is insurance companies are squeezing people and asking them to take drugs that are made outside of the United States of America. And if you have a drug that's got significant bioavailability problems, then you can get in real trouble. So the usual person only absorbs 40% of probably the number one sold drug in the United States of America. So if you only absorb 40%, that means there's 60% chance of error by my calculations. The answer is that you want to make sure that you have a drug product that's the same, made the same way all the time. I would definitely recommend that it be an American product. Mainly because you're going to be nuanced by what other countries consider appropriate. So again, thyroid hormone, very important to get the right stuff, very important to take it either an hour before breakfast, because the breakfast food can bind too much of it. Remember, coffee binds 40% of your thyroid pill. Number two would be to take it at bedtime. Number three, 30 minutes before dinner. Number four, 30 minutes before breakfast. So if you follow those directions, your batch-to-batch uniformity will hopefully be, because you have a good product, hopefully made in America, will give you the same result in and out. That's the way to go on that. So hypothyroidism needs to be treated. It's incredibly successful. You can see people turn around. They can get rid of fluid. They can get rid of weight. Their perk and pop can go up. If somebody was thinking that somebody is in the process of losing it, a lot of times when hypothyroidism is diagnosed and treated, there is no losing it anymore, and things are quite good. Want to talk a little bit about DEXA scanning again. So again, with DEXA scanning, that's where a woman basically is usually mostly women, they will get an assessment of the density in both their wrist, the density in their spine, and hip. So the issue is that does someone have osteopenia, which means bone is a little bit decreased, or osteoporosis, which means they have a minus 2.5 on the Richter scale. If you hit minus 2.5, that means your bone has been depleted substantially and that you are at risk for fracture. And that's where the U.S. government has come through and basically is doing a lot to make sure that people can get treated. We do know there's about 10 drugs on the U.S. market. One that has been incredibly beneficial in my practice is Prolia. You have to have a DEXA scan of minus 2.5. Mm-hmm. You come into the office and get an injection every 6 months. The price is, I think, about $1,500. I'm not really sure, but I think that's what it is. And, you know, we had one of the establishments ask me to purchase the drug for them, and they would administer the drug, which actually drove me crazy, Because when you have a $1,500 injection, do you want somebody else at a center to give that injection? Well, Dr. Fallon told him to drop dead, and that if the insert says a physician should give the shot at $1,500, I give the shot in the anterior thigh. Incredible positivity. Medicare has approved that now for 10 years. One of the better moves I've ever seen. So there are about 10 drugs on the U.S. market. We have some anabolics that can make new bone, which is absolutely fantastic. If you make new bone, a lot of people will say, how come I'm not breaking any bones anymore? I get that all the time with that drug Prolia being utilized. Okay, just to try and move on a little bit. So there's something called chronic pruritus. So pruritus means itch. Chronic pruritus defined as itch experienced for 6 weeks or longer affects approximately 22% of people in their lifetime. Approximately 1% of physician visits are for the chief concern of chronic pruritus. Chronic pruritus is associated with adverse outcomes, including impaired sleep and reduced quality of life. So the question is, if you have pruritus, what do you want to do? You want to catch the doctor quickly and see if he can come up with one of the myriad of potential interventions which can help you out. I would say most people who get to the doctor, their chronic pruritus will be taken care of appropriately. What's the root cause of chronic pruritus? Is it inflammatory, neuropathic, combined? First-line therapies are topical steroids for inflammatory causes such as hydrocortisone 2.5% or triamcinolone 0.1%. Topical neuropathic agents for neuropathic causes such as menthol or pramoxine. Any combination of these therapies for mixed etiologies for chronic pruritus. We do note that the causes are a little bit on the legion side. Immunologic parotic conditions include atopic dermatitis, bullous pemphigoid, nasty, chronic urticaria, et cetera. Systemic conditions with secondary itch. This is really tough. End-stage kidney disease. Those guys can take a beating. Carcinoid syndrome. Carcinoid syndrome, rare but positive, very important to diagnose. Additionally, some people in pregnancy get cholestasis of pregnancy. Diabetes can cause itch. Hep C can cause itch. Primary biliary cirrhosis can cause itch. So if you've got an itch, there's a lot of differential diagnosis that one has to go through. Generally, your dermatologist will come with this, do it much faster than I can say. But just to bring out a completeness, neuropathic pruritic conditions are positive. Multifactorial mixed conditions are positive, such as prurigo nodularis or pruritus, just plain pruritus in older adults. Did the skin decrease in quality? Infectious bed bugs, God help us. HIV, new infection or uncontrolled, help us. Scabies. We do note that some medications can cause pruritus or itch, opioid stimulants, and systemic immunotherapy. But no one wants an itch, including me. Okay. So the next item on the agenda is going to be hypertension. So hypertension is an incredibly treatable condition. It has resulted in hypertension being treated has resulted in substantial improvement in life. It's basically taken the pressure off of hearts to pump. When that pressure goes up, the heart's got to pump more. And it's just been phenomenal. I do want to say that the general goal is to hit a 120 over 80. That's what the government talks about. But it depends on exactly, you know, what your overall condition is. So the physician has to take into account how good your heart is. Does the patient have any blockages in the heart? Does the patient have edema? All these issues come in to make sure that the patient has the best blood pressure in town, which can help out substantially. So we have tremendous amount of blood pressure drugs today. If anybody is hypertensive and is not taking advantage of the drugs, it's really a mistake. Remember, you have drugs that are very inexpensive, such as water pills that do a great job. Hydrocortisone is the number one seller. It's either usually a 25 milligram tablet. It makes people pee for 16 hours. So yes, you can sleep. There's medications such as Hygroton that have been on the market 40 years that have proof if you take it for 10 years, you live longer. Hygroton, very smooth, does a great job. And what's nice about it is if it lasts 16 hours, that means basically you can take it in the morning. And by the time you're ready to go to bed, there's no more need to reduce any more diuretic urine flow because you've already taken care of that in the first 16 hours. A great drug. There's people who have heart issues that need something like Lasix, furosemide. Furosemide is incredibly potent. Some people just can't believe how much better they feel after, say, they go to the emergency room and have a little bit of backflow, and the doctor gives them Lasix, and Lasix lasts 6 hours, and you know, their resolution of shortness of breath, et cetera, can be quite good. Again, there's other medications out there called ACE inhibitors. Altase is one that's big, been around a long time, probably 40 years. Some people can get a cough if they don't get a cough, and otherwise usually their blood pressure is good, and they live longer with Altase, a fantastic product. There's the people who have a little bit tougher blood pressure, hypertension, and in those cases, we need calcium channel blockers. The calcium channel blockers, the number one known is amlodipine, works incredibly well. It's got a high potency, can be very beneficial. So we have probably another 10 different types of blood pressure pills. My overall impression is that treating hypertension gives a great benefit for society because you get a lot of results with limited risk. Let's just talk a little bit about next week's guest. I'm incredibly happy to say that we have a cholesterol expert on next week. I'm really building him up. He's been on the program once before. If you want to go back and look at Inside Medicine's podcast, www.wwdbam.com. You can hit Inside Medicine. There's over 100 programs up. Dr. Peter Bentivoglia was on about a year ago, and I requested he come back at Christmas time. We want to make sure that everybody has a chance to get their iced tea or their coffee and listen to his work. Tremendously positive. Other items that coming down the track include compliance. We do note that it's a wintertime deal. Compliance is a big issue. Somebody who doesn't take their medications can drive the doctor crazy, especially if they don't tell them that they're not taking their medication. Makes it very, very tough. Sometimes if you're a diabetic and you tell the doctor you're taking all your medications and the A1C, which normally would be less than a 6.5 for normal, you know, is one of these 12 or 16. So obviously there's many, many things going wrong. So talking to your doctor and telling him what's really going on can help and make that visit much more effective. But we need to know what people are taking and what they're not. It doesn't help for you to hide it. And also, we want you to have questions. Like, for instance, talking about diuretics. You know, if you tell a patient that Lasix, S-I-X, lasts only 6 hours, they can plan that into their daily deal so they don't want to be flushing the toilet when they're at work. So you get 6 hours and then it's over. You get rid of the fluid, your legs look better, you got more perk and pop. So again, just getting truthful. In other words, you know, with the blood pressure pills, the average person may be on 3 blood pressure pills and the costs are up. You have to talk about that with your doctor. There are some older drugs that are incredibly efficacious and can prove beneficial. So just lay it out on the table. Say, look, this is the problem. I don't have insurance. I do have insurance. They're not going to cover this because you can't give somebody certain medications if the cost is ridiculously high. So again, that's where thyroid hormone comes in. Like the price of Synthroid, in my opinion, has been artificially elevated by movements within the higher ups. And which when you charge somebody $90 for 90 pills, and it's a every day in and day out, it's a little bit of money. That's why a lot of people are moving to levothyroxine. But like they say, who's making the drug? Is it an American company? Is it a non-American company? What's going on here? So again, Compliance with blood pressure pills, very important. Compliance with diabetic pills, even more important. I do want to talk about compliance, so that's come up this week in my practice. So again, when you take care of a type 1 diabetic, you're trying to take care of 24 hours of how good their diabetes is. So that means usually most of us are going to take a look at before breakfast, lunch, dinner, and bedtime. So that's four sugar checks a day. Probably the problem is we're having some resistance from insurers, as they only want to do three times a day if you're a type 1 diabetic. But there's four decimal points that you're looking for if you're an endocrinologist: one before breakfast, one before lunch, one at dinner time, one at bedtime. So again, the patient's a little betwixt and between. So if you can check out your blood sugar at those four times, then you have the opportunity to fix it, and therefore your A1C will go better. That way your well-being will go up, and your longevity will also go up too. So again, in the diabetic marketplace, we do, if you're a type 1, you do want to have some quick-acting insulin, Nobelog, Humalog. We do note that I think some of the insulins are now going off the market because of the cost restrictions that have been generated lately. We have the longer-acting insulins, Traceba, as an example, and that these drugs can basically make sure the person sleeps through the night, doesn't get a low blood sugar, and has a quality life. So again, type 1 diabetics are on insulin before meals and long-acting insulin. It works incredibly well. If you're a type 2 diabetic, that's where we get into some heat, mainly because a lot of the type 2s want to take medications such as Farxiga or Jardiance, which are incredibly beneficial, getting rid of excess fluid, protecting kidneys, and controlling blood sugar. So some of these drugs are getting on the expensive side. Patients are having a hard time coming up with the money to pay for them day in and day out, which is a significant problem that I can't fix. In terms of the diabetic marketplace, we have to remind people to please get their eye exams. We have to make sure that people take off their shoes when they're in the office so that it's easier to feel their pulses. It's easier to get a tuning fork come out and to put it down there and see if they have early neuropathy. These kind of things can be very motivating to the patient and also are addressable by the physician. So take your shoes off and socks when you're in that office. And if they say why, tell them Dr. Fallon said so. Because if you don't have them off, a lot of times if people are behind, they just won't look at those toes. Other items to consider are making sure that you take your eye exam. The eye exams are incredibly important. The ophthalmologist can dilate your eyes. Yes, they're a little bit dilated, but it's worth it once a year to see if there's anything out there on the outside, because basically the ophthalmologist can do incredibly good work at these days at nixing diabetic eye disease. You got to get checked. Make sure if you're a glaucoma person that you get your blood pressure, you get your ocular pressure measured. The worst thing to do is to have somebody who has glaucoma and doesn't take his medications. I've told this story before. My wife's grandfather had an issue with his eyes. Basically, he didn't take his medications, and he lived in Illinois near the lake, and used to take a walk at night. The problem was that area was now defined as the state was going to close everything down, but if you lived there, you could stay there until you died. So what happened is he used to always be a walker, walking at night. They decided to turn the lights off because the population was so low, they figured they could save money. And what happened is Grandpapa was walking down the road and some kids decided to play the game where you take the lights off of your car. And he was hit on the side. One of the reasons is that when you have glaucoma, your peripheral vision goes. So he didn't have the ability to see well in the periphery. And when you're driving down a dark road, how close do you get to the edge? Anyway, Gramps was hit and killed. And that's just a deal that if you have glaucoma, you got to take that medicine so that you don't lose that peripheral vision. Do Gramps know he was losing it? I don't think so. But again, the hospital record, the doctor's record stressed. They recommended his compliance, which he didn't do. And probably, you know, that's why he passed away, was the fact that he just didn't have peripheral vision. And the kids were a little bit on the wild side. And that was that. So glaucoma, you take your drops, don't lose your vision. Remember, it's nasty to lose that periphery when you can't see on the side. So we will continue to tell that story, I guess, every few years about Gramps. Now, the only other item I want to move forward on is exercise. So the problem here is that we have GLP-1 drugs. And GLP-1 drugs, if you exercise, you actually lose more weight. And that's generally how it goes. So again, people who want a GLP-1 drug, your object isn't just to have that drug go to your brain and say, hey, you don't have to eat. And what happened is people lose the weight. But again, you have to have other things to make sure that you synergize to get better results. So when you're walking, you're helping yourself lose weight. When you're exercising at the gym, you're helping yourself lose weight. Any little bit that you do can help. So we recommend highly that people exercise. The cost is zero. It's your time that you're playing. Make sure that, again, that if it's dark out, that you basically are on the side of the road and that a car wouldn't take you out. We do want to say that the more exercise you do, the better off you are. Remember, the people who get GLP-1 drugs, it's not you just take the drug. You want to limit your calories, and you have to participate too. You don't want to try and overcome the drug. Remember that the drug is escalated. So like every 4 weeks, generally the dose goes up until you had a high dose. One drug, it's 15. Another drug, it's going to be 60. So we have different drugs that we want to keep updating like every week to make sure that we can get the maximal benefit. What has been the result so far? We've had a massive reduction in MI, massive reduction in kidney issues, massive reduction in overall weight, quality of life has gone up, perk and pop has gone up. So again, the medications, whether it's going to be Ozempic, Mounjaro, Zepbound, Wegovy, these drugs are phenomenal, but you have to work with them. You want to make sure that you take your drug every week, and you want to make sure that your doctor can advance the drugs at least every 4 weeks if possible to maximize your benefit. The price is the same whether you get a 2.5, you know, or you get a 2 milligram dose. So again, GLP-1 drugs for the year, we know everybody wants them. They're working really well. Basically less strokes, less MI. Kidney function is improved. So overall things are good. We just want to make sure that everybody knows that you got to take the drug to work. And we can see that a lot of people are frustrated because the pharmacies are short of medication. But do the best you can to work that out. So I would say GLP-1s are in. I would say exercise is in. I would say cutting back calories is in. I would say Americans are going to live a lot longer because of GLP-1 drugs. And it appears the U.S. government is pushing forward to try and get those approved for a number of citizens that weren't actually able to get those drugs before. They work. They're tremendous. And I can just see the benefits, and my patients can also see the benefits. So again, want to go back a little bit. Peter's going to be with us next week. I just want to make sure everybody knows he's one of the best speakers we've ever had. And I'm looking forward to his program. Remember our website for podcasts, www.wwdbam.com. If you hit Inside Medicine, then you're going to get about 125 podcasts. You can screen them. Peter was on last year, about a year ago, if you want to prep. Overall, an excellent guest coming, and I'm incredibly happy that he's going to be with us. We've got other guests coming, I'm very happy to say. And I wish everybody a great new year. Stay healthy. Make sure that you check your vision out. Don't be a Gramps. Dr. Fallon is going to be signing off. Inside Medicine, www.wwdbam.com. Hit Inside Medicine. There's 125 podcasts up. Please check them out. If you want to check out Peter, it'll be there. Dr. Fallon's saying, just make sure that in your retirement, nearly 40% of U.S. adults who retired earlier than they planned did so because of a health issue or disability. Housing costs are a key factor in retirement planning. More than 40% of retirees own their home outright. So that sounds good, but you got to make sure that you work for paying off that house so that you don't have a lot of obligations after you hit that magic 65 or get that. What are reasons that people retire early? Health problems, changes in your company, was possible financially, work-related reasons, need to care for a family member. So there you are. Dr. Fallon signing off. Have a great weekend. See you guys next week with Peter.